Page 400. Really moving. No, we didn't get to, we got to the bottom of 400.
Speak to the ladies.
Yes. Okay. Last time we were discussing, the Pasuk is saying that in the third month, to the Jews leaving Egypt, they came to the desert. We discussed at great length last time the whole concept of three, and why Torah is connected to three, and we're not going into that again. And then the last thing we're learning is the Jews camped as one person, neged ha'or, opposite the mountain. And then the last pasuk, which we didn't finish yet, but we started, the Moshe Rabbeinu in pasuk Gimel, Moshe Olah Elokim, Moshe Rabbeinu went up to God, and as Rashi says, he went up on the second day of Sivan. Because we learned in the Psukim that the Jews came to Midbar Sinai, to the desert, on the first day of Sivan. Then Moshe Rabbeinu went up. Anytime Moshe Rabbeinu went up to the mountain was in the morning. That's a given. Rashi says that because it said, Vayashki Moshe Babeker, Moshe Rabbeinu got up in the morning. So anytime Moshe Rabbeinu went up to the mountain was on the next morning. So obviously if the Jews camped on the first day, Rosh Chodesh, the second day of Sivan, Moshe Rabbeinu went up. God called him from the mountain, and we explained last week, or whenever it was, that this is the revelation of God coming to Moshe. And he said to him the following, so you should say to the house of Jacob, which refers to the women, and then we started discussing, that's why the girls' schools are called Beis Yaakov, because of this pasuk. And you should be harsh to the men. Now, to the women, you have to tell it softer. To the men, you got to be a little harsher. So they bring down four reasons why God says first to the women, then to the men. You know, why should the women get it before the men? So one reason is because they're more meticulous in mitzvahs. Women are more careful in mitzvahs than men are. Secondly, they have to educate the children because they're more connected to the children. They're more hanging around the children more. Even when you want to acquire land from a man, you have to, like it says in Allah, you should talk to the woman too and make sure she agrees to it. If not, you're in hot water. And third thing, the fourth reason is because when in Parshas Beshalach we discussed that in the merit of the righteous women, the Jews left Egypt. So if they left Egypt in the merit of the women should be spoken to first about the Torah. Okay, this is where we left off last week. Then the Pasuk says, and this is a very important Pasuk, in dealing with other types of religions and stuff. Atem re'isem, Hashem is saying to Moshe Rabbeinu, or to the speech, tell the Yidin, Atem re'isem, you yourself saw Asher asisa l'mitzrayim, which I did to the Egyptians. Meaning the Pasuk says, it's Yiddishkeit, and this is a whole interesting concept with the Ten Commandments and Matan Torah. Hashem is telling the Jewish people, what happened in Egypt is not something you heard from other people. You yourself saw it. So when I'm talking to you about the miracles that I did for you and all the things, it's not something you heard about many generations later. You yourself saw it. Plus, I carried you on eagle wings, and we'll soon see what that means. And I brought you to me. Now, Hashem said, what do you mean what I did? You yourself saw what I did to Egyptians. So Rashi quotes in the Medrash, what Hashem is basically saying is, the Egyptians were the most corrupt country in the world. Even Avraham Avinu already had problems when he took Sarah down to the land of Mitzrayim. Power took her away, and it was a corrupt country, and Power had to tell him, get out of here, because we're such a corrupt society. So Hashem said, yet I didn't punish the Egyptians until the Jews came along. So you see all the things that I did just for you. Not only that, I carried you on eagle wings. What does it mean, eagle wings? So it says that Rashi also quotes, eagle is the highest flying bird. It's the highest flying bird. And an eagle carries its kids on its shoulders. Most birds carry the kids by their feet. The feet of the bird carries the babies. Except the eagle carries them on their back. And the reason for that is because all birds are afraid of the eagle. Because if they carry the bird, their kids on top of them, the eagle can come down and grab the kids and go away. The eagle is not afraid of anybody else because he's the highest flying bird. The only thing the eagle is afraid of is the arrows people shoot up to them. So to protect their kids, they carry them on top of them that the arrows shouldn't hit them. So Hashem said, I, obviously being Hashem, I'm not afraid of anybody. So Hashem said, the protection I gave you is similar to the protection that that an eagle gives its babies. Meaning it's the ultimate type of connection. It's a protection and so on. Now, there's a uniqueness about Yiddishkeit that other religions don't have. Just to mention a few issues. Muslims, for instance, is based on the prophecies Muhammad said that God told them. They didn't see the prophecies. They didn't see any revelations of God. Muhammad came and said, this is what God said. In other religions, it's also, this guy came and said this, and this guy came and said this, and whatever. Matan Torah, and this is the introduction of the Chinuch, who goes and enumerates all the 613 mitzvahs, in the Agdam of the Chinuch, he says, one of the proofs, from a scientific type of a proof, that Torah is true, is in the fact of the historical fact that 3 million people witnessed the giving of the Torah. It wasn't that Moshe Rabbeinu came down from heaven and said, hey guys, God just gave me the Torah, he told me something, this and this and this. It's something that the entire Jewish nation, which at that time was composed of close to 3 million people, everybody saw exactly what went on. It wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu telling him, God gave you the Torah. God gave it. Every Jew saw it. 600,000 men between 20 and 60. If you count the babies, senior citizens, and the women. So that's close to 3 million. Between 2 and 3 million, they estimate. No, that's in America. 1.34, whatever.
If they have 6 and 7, it's more than 2.3 million.
Well, if the women had 6 at a shot in Egypt, the question is, when was the last time they had 6 at a shot? The kids could have been over 20 already. It depends, whatever, you know. But there were a lot of people. And they all, and that's why the Pasuk says, Atam Re'isim, it's Torah that you're getting, is not something that you heard from somebody else. It's a historical fact. Just like, to use American history as an example, nobody questions the validity of George Washington. Everybody knows George Washington existed. George Washington, I didn't see him, you didn't see him, my grandfather didn't see him. I mean, he lived a few hundred years ago. But a bunch of people saw him, and they wrote it down in a history book. And in a history book, which is, it's not that one person saw it, you know, George Washington chopped down the cherry tree. So that's, Bubba Mises, because he said it's a Bubba, you know, it's not actually happened. But things that actually happened is considered a historical fact because everybody saw it. People saw it. And the same thing with Matan Torah, the Jews saw it. And that's why Hashem says, Atem Le'isim. He's not speaking about Matan Torah, he's speaking basically about Yetzias Mitzrayim. But he's saying, you saw, and I brought you to me. Now, what does it mean? So Rashi also explains in the Medrash, when the Jews were in Egypt, the Jews were spread out throughout the entire land of Goshen. In 2 seconds, the Jews had to leave. God gathered all the Jews together, and they were able to go out of Mitzrayim together. So he says, this itself is a miracle of how Hashem gathered all the Jews together. And that's why, you know, people have a problem. Your Mashiach comes, how are you going to get all the Jews from all over the place? So far, you know, it was done already historically. And in 2 seconds, all the Jews got together. Roll a nickel down the street, all the Jews will come. They'll all run. You know, they say how you start a Jewish parade. Roll a quarter down the street, you got all the Jews. Well, it's true when it's not nice. It's true. In America, it's a free country. Okay, it says, less than an hour, Hashem gathered them on the clouds, and everybody came, and everybody was carrying everything. So Hashem says, I took you out of Egypt, and you saw it, and so on. So now he says as follows. Va'ato now, im shemaya tishmu b'keli, if you will listen to my voice, meaning of the mitzvahs, ushmartem es brisi, and you will keep my covenant, then, vayisam misigulam mikolo amim, you will be a treasured nation from all the nations, kili kol ha'aretz, because the whole world is mine. Meaning Hashem says, I own the whole world, okay, and for me, everybody is considered nothing, and the only one which is, as we know them, to be called the chosen people, the treasured people, is only the Jewish people. But in order to do that, Hashem says, you have to keep my covenant. What's the covenant? The covenant that Mepharshim explained is Shabbos, circumcision, because these are two brisen that we speak about, and the concept of Avodah Zarah, that there's no idol worshipping. These are the covenants that Hashem speaks about. And then he says, you have to listen to my voice also, meaning you have to keep all my mitzvahs. Now, Rashi says, Segula is basically a treasured nation, treasured people. The Jews are a treasure of Hashem. Segula. Rashi says there's not really too many words in Chumash like that. No, Rashi says, in fact, Rashi says, not over here, but Rashi just says, it's Eitzir Chaviv. It's a tremendous treasure. It's an unbelievable treasure. No. He says that even though that their higher forms of people are very great, but the Jews are even greater. Now, the Jews are the chosen people. But that's only on the condition that the Jews keep the covenant. That's what Hashem is saying, basically. Keep the covenant, and then that's the one you're going to be treasured, special for me. And Hashem says, you shouldn't think that I only did the miracles in Egypt, even though you really didn't have any mitzvahs. Like, we know, the Torah says you were naked for mitzvahs, they didn't have any mitzvahs. Nevertheless, Hashem did it. Hashem says, I'm going to do it. I'm going to continue being yours. But now, there's a condition attached. And that is, you have to do mitzvahs. Okay? You do mitzvahs, you're mine. You don't do mitzvahs, you're not mine. But again, as Chassidus explains, that's only in the revealed relationship between Hashem and the Jew. In the essential bond between Hashem and the Jew, as like the Pasuk is going to say later, that you're God's children, regardless of the behavior, you're still the child. Okay, so then he continues, and he says, Ba'atam tiyulim mamlechas kayanim v'goy kodesh. Hashem continues, and this is said on the second day of Sivan, you should be to me a kingdom of ministers, v'goy kodesh, in a holy nation. So these are the words that you should speak to the Jewish people. So on the second day of Sivan, when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai, it's called in Halacha, Yom HaMeyuchas. It's the day of identity. Because on this day, Hashem identified the Jewish people. Number one, that there is segula, there is treasure. And the Amamlechas Koyanim, a kingdom of priests, v'goy kodesh, in a holy nation. The Balaturim on this pasuk says, not only is Mamlechas Koyanim as a regular Kohen, but he explains it's even the level of a Kohen Gadol. It's also, you call Kohanim Gedolim. It's going to be not only a regular Kohen, but actually a Kohen Gadol high priest. This pasuk explains a Arizal doctrine that has a problem in Halacha, so to speak. The Arizal writes in Kabbalah that every neshama, every soul, has to learn all of Torah and keep all the mitzvahs. And until the neshama does that, it has to keep coming down again and again and again and again until it finally finishes all Torah, all aspects of Torah, pshat, remez, drush, sod, and keep all mitzvahs. Yeah, we're finished already. We better be.
Women also?
Women got it right the first time. They don't even have to come down. They get it perfect. Yeah, so isn't so nice. Okay. Now, so now, the question is, there are certain mitzvahs, for instance, there are mitzvahs that are connected only to a king. Mitzvahs connected to a king. How many kings can you have already? Let's say there's 10 mitzvahs connected to a king. He's not allowed to have too many wives, he's not allowed to have too much money, he's not allowed to have too many horses. Yeah, it's certain dinim that he has to write a sefer Torah. So the question is, how can every Jew come down eventually and be a king if not every Jew can be a king? How many kings? It's one king per generation. Even Kohanim, how many people could be Kohanim already? I mean, you have every Jew come down to be a Kohanim. I mean, it's very difficult to have that. So it says in Darizal that how does that happen? L'cheder, you need to do all the mitzvahs. So Darizal explains, or Chassidus explains, that the king does the obligation for you. Like you make Kiddush for somebody. The king is Meitzi, everybody, the obligation of the mitzvahs connected to a king. Kohanim, free everybody, by them doing the mitzvahs of Kohanim, they fulfill the obligation of every Jew. But the question is, in order for somebody to fulfill a mitzvah for somebody, they have to have some type of equality. Like, say, a woman who's not obligated in the mitzvah cannot do it for a man. A child who's not obligated in mitzvahs cannot do it for a man, right? You can't have a woman blowing shofar for a man. You can't have a kid blowing shofar for an adult because they're not obligated in the mitzvah. So how can you have a king fulfilling the obligation of every Jew being a kohen and a king if the Jew doesn't have a connection to it? And the answer is this pasuk says that every Jew is a king and a kohen. The positive va'atem tiyuli mamlechas kohanim v'goy kodesh, that every Jew is a melech and a kohen. Simply means a kingdom of priests, of ministers. But the truth is, to tell you what is God saying, that every Jew is a melech, and every Jew is a kohen.
If Leo Pressure were here,
therefore, the king and the kohen could fulfill their people with their obligation, because every Jew has a connection to being a Kohen and being a king. And that's why it's a very important pasuk. In addition to the fact that we know that the Yom HaMiyuchas is a very special day that Hashem appointed all of us, you know, to be Mamlachas Kohen and Vegai Kaddish. The pasuk says, the Mefoshim explained, to taking a step further, just to preface it, there was a chassid of the Alter Rebbe that said, he never sinned because of ego. Most people sin because of ego. This chassid said, he never sinned because of ego. What was his ego? Whenever he came with the thought of sinning, he said to himself, I'm such a great chassid of the Alter Rebbe, I'm such a great person, it's below my dignity to stoop to sin. So he said his ego kept him from sinning because he said,
You talking about Moses?
No. A chassid.
Page 402.
So it says, the chassid said, how could he sin? He's such a great person. But Hashem is telling the Jew, you are mamlechas kohanim. You are a very holy nation. If you're a holy nation, act holy. In other words, don't degrade your dignity by doing things what other people do, because you're different than everybody else. We are different, that's the bottom line. There's a pasuk later on in Chumash in Vayikra, in Bechukais, I believe it is. The pasuk says, the land of Israel, the Torah speaks, when you come to Israel, the land of Israel, you have to behave properly and so on. And the Torah says, the earth should not vomit you up, like they vomited the nations before you. And Rashi says that Eretz Yisrael is the analogy of a very refined stomach. You have certain people that can eat any food, it doesn't bother them. Their stomach is so coarse, you know, everything goes, it's fine. And there's certain people that have very delicate stomachs. You know, they eat something wrong, they right away they throw up. So this, Rashi says over there from the Gemara, from the Medrash, and later on Vayikra, Eretz Yisrael is a very holy, delicate land. It can't tolerate sin. it vomits up the people who sin. It gets rid of you. So the Pasuk is saying over here, the Mefarshim explain, Hashem is telling the Jewish people, you are Mamlechas Kohanim v'Goy Kaddish, you are a Goy Kaddish, a holy nation. What does Goy Kaddish mean? We learned what Chassidus defines the word holy. You know, there's a lot of interesting words that everybody uses. You could call them the four-letter words. Holy, good four-letter words. That everybody uses, and when you ask them, define it, they have a very hard time defining it. I'll give you an example. Ask somebody, what does the word love mean? Very popular word, I love you. You know, love, love, love. Define love for me. They will have a hard time defining what real love means. There's a third definition of love, but I don't want to get into that now. Maybe. No, there's an... One minute. Let me first finish this point. There's another four-letter word called holy. Holy is also a four-letter word. Ask somebody, what does the word holy mean? What does it mean? Certain words we use very often, but it's very difficult to define it without, so to speak, Chassidus or a Torah definition of what the word means. The definition of the word holy, the word Kaddish, means separated and removed. Kaddish umuvdal. When something is removed from the norm, it's holy. Something which is part of the norm, part of this course of life, it's not holy. When the Torah says the Jewish people are Goy Kaddish means that the Jewish people are different and removed from the rest of the world. What makes them removed and different from the rest of the world? That Hashem says to the Jewish people, I chose you, like we say, Ata v'chatonu mikol ha'amim, you chose us from all nations. We say in davening every day before Shema, Uvanu v'charta mikol am v'loshin, you chose us from all nations of the world. God chose us to be different. And the truth is, a Jew is different. And therefore, by the way, there's many laws in the Torah, not only of not assimilating with the Goyim, or the Torah says you shouldn't dress like a Goy. With Chukisem Leiselecho, you can't go in the ways of the Goyim. All of those things is because the Torah says the Jews are different. And if you're different, you have to act differently than everybody else. So this is what Hashem is saying before Matan Torah. One second. You are becoming Mamlechas Kohanim v'Goy Kaddish. You are becoming a holy nation. And by the way, this is even before the Torah is given. This is even before the Torah is given. In the Dayenus, we say on Pesach, yeah, everybody knows Dayenu. They know anything else, but they know how to sing Dayenu. In what?
Where's the green onion?
Yeah, he go around hitting everybody. Now, here in that Dayenu, we say a funny statement. Ilu kevanu l'fnei Har Sinai, if God would have brought us close to Har Sinai, v'leinas and lanas atayin, didn't give us the Torah, Dayenu. So everybody asks, Har Sinai is Matan Torah. What do you mean? If God would have brought us to Har Sinai and that given us the Torah, would have also been enough. What do you mean enough? What's Har Sinai without the Torah? So the Rebbe writes in the Agada that it means the Kalis of Rakim and the revelations of godliness even before giving the Torah. But there's also a point over here. What it means is if God would have brought us close to Har Sinai and told us this Pasuk, Mamlechas Kohanim v'Goy Kaddish, a holy nation, even before the Torah was given, that God said, I'm making you the treasured nation that you are different than everybody else, that itself would have been Dayenu, even if we didn't get to step two of getting the Torah. So this is a remarkable point. One second. So holiness means you're separated from the rest of the world. Just to answer your question very quickly, hello. The definition of love... Definition of love is a very simple definition according to Torah. The word in Hebrew for love is ahava. Ahava equals 13. Aleph Hei Beis Hei. The word echad equals 13. Love is when you become one with the thing you love. You can elaborate on this for years. But the nukuda, the point of love, when you love somebody, is when you become one with them. That could be done in millions of different ways or whatever, but that's the point. Okay. So the Eibishter is saying, you should be this holy nation, nation of Kayanim, Elad Varmashit Tadabel B'nai Yisrael. These are the words that you should speak to the Jewish people. Okay, then the Pasuk says, so therefore basically, the last point we were saying is, because the Jews are separate, because the Jews are a treasure, because the Jews are holy, they have to act, holy. Okay? Then it says, Vayavim Meisha came, Vayikra Lezikne Ha'am, he called the leaders of the people, because before he wanted to, not to sell the Torah, but to give the Torah to the Jewish people, the leaders have to first accept it, you know, and understand what it is. So, Meisha Rabbeinu called the leaders, because he said to them all the things, but Vayasim Lefneim Eis Kol Advarim Ha'ela, he put before them all these things that God said, but and it's interesting. The Pasuk doesn't even say what the leader said. The Pasuk said right away, Vayanu Kolam Yachta Vayemru. All the people, we're going to elaborate on this, but all the Pasuk, all the entire nation said that we will accept Kol Ashadibar Nas Hashem Nas, whatever God said we're going to do. This is not the Nas of Inishma, by the way, that happened later. This is again on the, Meshe Rabbeinu came down on the third day. Okay?
So by now there's no Torah yet, or there is some...
No, this is just the concept of you keep my covenant, what I'm going to tell you, and you'll be Mamlechas Kohen and Vegoi Kodesh. So then, that's what he told him. He didn't give him any details of Torah yet. They didn't know any details of Torah yet. Now, one more thing, which is very important over here, which is a fundamental thing that the Rebbe explains in Tanya. The definition of free choice... The definition of free choice is when two things are exactly equal. If you say, I'm choosing between gold and dirt, or if I want to choose between soda and water, that's not called free choice, because soda and water are different. So if I prefer water over soda, it's not free choice, because there's a quality deal. It's less fattening than soda, okay? Or quenches my thirst better than soda, and I choose water over soda, it is not called free choice, because there are different characteristics of each one. So it's not free choice. The definition of Bechira Chofshis, the definition of free choice, is when two things are exactly equal, there's no reason to choose one over the next, and I chose one over the next. That is Bechira. Which means, it's not logic, because any time I choose something because of its qualities, that's not free choice. It's seichel. Seichel dictates, intellect dictates, that this is better than this, for me, at the present at least. So therefore, it's not free choice by real definition means something that has nothing to do with logic. It has not anything to do with what I like. Two things are exactly equal, and I choose one over the next. To the extent... If I can have two empty styrofoam cups, one's on my right and one's on the left, and I choose one, it's also not free choice. Because I can have preference of right over left or left over right. It's still not equal. Free choice is two things are exactly equal, and you choose one over the next. So now the Rebbe explains in Tanya that when Hashem chose the Jewish people, you can't say that you're talking about neshama. A Yiddish neshama is not the same as a Goyish neshama. Right? A Goyish neshama is a Goyish neshama, and a Jewish neshama is a neshama. So that's different. So you can't say that Hashem chose the Jewish neshama over a Goyish neshama. So the Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya that this that we say, Uvana v'charta mikolam v'loshin, refers to the body of the Jew. The body of the Jew, which Nidma b'chumriyusei is similar to the body of a guy. It's the same body, same everything. And Hashem chose this body to be Jewish and this body not to be Jewish, or rather, Hashem chose, he didn't choose both, Hashem chose that this body is going to be Jewish. So the primary free choice that God chose us, believe it or not, is on the body, not on the soul. because the soul is not free choice. Which shows the greatness of the Jewish body. Somebody might ask, the nose is different. Yeah, but that's it. But now with plastic surgery, you have it's the same nose. What? Profound.
No,
not profound, because not me. It's not Rebbe and Tanya. We don't have real free choice because of that. Even though there is a level of the neshama and relationship with God, that it says there's a passage that says Hashem says, Yaakov and Esav are brothers, and they loved Yaakov and they hated Esav. Och Esav li Yaakov ves Yaakov ahavti ves Esav sanesi. So Chassidus explains what does that pasuk mean. What type of strange pasuk is it? Yaakov and Esav are brothers, and the pasuk continues, says, Yaakov I loved and Esav I hated. So Chassidus explains that it refers to a level of godliness that Yaakov and Esav are equal. When you say they're brothers, they're equal. And when they're equal, then there's free choice to say, I chose Yaakov and Esav not.
Well, everything is about repeating something that seems the same, but not falling for the wrong one.
The truth is, real free choice we don't have, because when a person weighs the benefits of a mitzvah versus the benefit, but in our language, good and bad
exactly.
is basically choice. But it's not real b'chira chofshis. When the pasuk says, Re'ei nasati l'fanach hayein, God says, I'm giving you today, see, God says, see, I'm giving you today, good and bad, life and death, or b'chata b'chayim, choose life. So obviously, which fool is going to choose death? The answer is, we're talking about spiritual life and spiritual death. Okay? The person has the choice to pick good or bad. Now, obviously, if one's good and one's bad, they're not equal. But in our realm, in our world, that's the only free choice we do have.
But it is equal, because the intensity, the essence is the same. Because there are things on the essence, and there are things on the superficial.
But what it's makes something... But there's another point. What makes something right and something wrong?
Well, from what it hurts you...
No, what makes something right or wrong is... What God says is right, and what God says is wrong is wrong.
This is if we learn about God.
We're talking about Yiddishkeit.
Well,
in Yiddishkeit...
They didn't learn Yiddishkeit, they're Jewish, and they feel right and wrong.
In Yiddishkeit... We said many times, morals and ethics, true morals and ethics, meaning true right and wrong of morals and ethics, cannot be decided by humans. Because morals, from a human perspective, are relative to the time and the place. To give you a few examples, Hitler, Yimach Shemo, said it was morally a mitzvah. Not only is it morally right, it's morally a mitzvah to kill Jews. Mm-hmm. The Arabs say it's a moral mitzvah to kill Jews. In our own moral society in America, those of you that remember the 50s, what was completely immoral, completely wrong to do in the 50s, is a mitzvah in today's world. I was in the 50s.
What do you mean?
Give me an example.
The sexual permissiveness of today's world? The moral standards of today's world? Right? What was morally wrong then is not only accepted today, it's proper and it's good and it's the right way to go. And you have premarital issues. I mean, everything that you want to look in the moral standards. Now, morals, therefore, are changed by the people, by the time, and by the place. So, therefore, they can't be emes. Emes, by the way, this is all connected to the free choice. That's what I'm talking about. Emes is something, like we said, Aleph Mem Sof, beginning, middle, through the end. The definition of truth, which also people don't know what it means. Truth is something which is eternal. Something which is really an emes wrong is always wrong. In the year zero, 1,000, 2,000, 10,000, a million thousand. If it's wrong, it's wrong. If it's wrong, then it's no such thing as in Europe it's right, and in America it's wrong, or wrong here and right there in morals. Because if the Torah says it's morally wrong to do it, then there's no difference. If it's coming from the source of truth, then if it's morally wrong, it's always morally wrong at any time and in any place. We explained, and this answers a very fundamental question in the Mishnah. Everybody knows the first Mishnah of Pirkei Avos. First Mishnah of Pirkei Avos says, Moshe kibul Torah Mesinai, Moshe received the Torah from Sinai, gave it to Joshua, drew it to the elders, and so on. So the commentaries ask a very simple question. Pirkei, you know, the six orders of Mishnah. Okay, 63 tractates, but the six orders of Mishnah. Avos is midway through Mishnah. It's the last, almost the last tractate of the third order. Okay? So Pirkei Avos is midway through the entire oral Torah of Mishnah. So the question, wouldn't it make sense that the Mishnah, Moshe Kibul Torah Mesinai, should be the first Mishnah of the first tractate of the first Mishnah? You're talking about oral tradition, so the Mishnah wants to say, where does oral tradition come from? So it says, it should start off the first Mishnah of the entire Mishnayos, should start off by saying, guys, listen, you know where this comes from? Moshe got it from Sinai, and they gave it to Yeshua. Midway through Mishnah, you're halfway done with Mishnah, the Mishnah wakes up. Oh, guys, by the way, let me tell you where this comes from. It doesn't make sense. So what's the answer? The answer is fundamental answer. That Shabbos came from God, of course. That Brachas came from God, of course. That Yom Tov came from God, of course. That Kashrus came from God, of course. When it comes to morals, that people want to define morals in their own definition, in their own interpretation. So now the Torah comes along and says, I want you to know, when you're talking about morals, of his ethics, now let me tell you where ethics come from. Because the Torah ethics come from God, and therefore they're not dependent on time and place. They're not dependent on the moods of a certain nation to decide, I want to be morally, this is moral, this is not moral. Okay? Coming out of closets, in the closets, in the middle of the closets. Torah says, when it comes to morals, now I want to tell you where it comes from. So therefore, when the definition of right and wrong, the real definition of right and wrong, the authentic definition of right and wrong, can only come from God.
So there is no free choice at all.
There is free choice. Because God put us in a body with the Yetzer Hara, with the Yetzer Hara, that we have all the shtusim in front of our eyes, and the Gan Edens in the books. So then the Torah says, I'm putting in front of you today life and death, and I want you to pick life. But, one second, the concept of right and wrong, people have to understand. The definition of what the Torah says, right and wrong, which is what Matan Torah is all about, whether it's in laws of Shabbos or Kashrus or whatever it may be, or the laws of morals, the Torah says God chose it's right and God chose it's wrong. And therefore, right and wrong cannot be defined by people. It cannot be defined by people. Because people are biased based on the time and the place and the society.
One second.
Yeah, he's waiting too impatient.
Let me get
sorry,
in.
Marty,
okay, you're a big kid, you know.
And this is involved your dear husband, too. Going back to free choice.
No,
Bekitzer. I
You're teaching us.
Everything I did was free choice.
Right.
Just like John married you, free choice.
Doubt it. No. Okay. 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 No. No.
Okay. Look.
It's not.
I didn't want to go to yeshiva when I was a kid. I went to the school I wanted.
That's why you look the way you look.
I wanted. I went into the service because I wanted.
Okay. Okay.
I davened here because I wanted.
Oh no. Yeah. The question: do we want? Okay.
Rabbi, you skipped over free choice so much. We're full of it. Everyone here.
I thought you're full of it. Yeah.
No, come on.
Okay. Anyway. So the concept. No, this is an important concept in Yiddishkeit to remember. When it comes to Torah mitzvahs, the right and wrong of Torah mitzvahs is right and wrong of absolute. It's not made up by people. Like the Rebbe gave once the example. The American Constitution is by the people, for the people. Okay? Therefore, if times demand a change, then you amend the Constitution, which means you change the Constitution. Why? Because it was set up by people, for the people. So it was good, and when it started, let's say, the women shouldn't vote, which was good in those days, and then they decided to change their mind, that women should vote, so then they amended the Constitution, or all the other amendments. But in Torah, there's no amending the Torah, because the right and wrong of Torah are absolute.
Is it for
a goy also? Which one is for a Jew? Yeah, no, the Torah says, the seven mitzvahs b'nei noach, for a goy, there's absolutely nothing wrong eating a cheeseburger. There's absolutely nothing wrong with a guy desecrating Shabbos. In fact, Halacha says, a guy is not allowed to keep Shabbos, and the Gemara says, a guy who keeps Shabbos, and the Rambam says, even if it's Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, if a guy makes one day Shabbos, they're chayiv misa. They get capital punishment. Why? Because the Torah says, Shabbos is only a concept for Jews. A guy does not have a concept of Shabbos, and therefore it's wrong for them to have a concept of Shabbos. Why? Shabbos is one of the Ten Commandments. Why is that? It's a very simple concept. The concept of Shabbos by a Jew, what's the concept of Shabbos by a Jew? It's not one day a week you just take a break. That's not what it means, according to Hasidus. According to Hasidus, the concept of Shabbos is, you have God the way God associates with world, meaning the name Elohim. The ten utterances were Vayom Elohim, Vayom Elohim, Vayom Elohim, Breishis Bara Elohim. Elohim is that level of godliness that deals with world. So that level of God creates. So Hashem says 6 days, you have an obligation to create. Sheish Yishyamim Tasa Melachtecha, a Jew has an obligation to create 6 days. Because then a Jew associates with God. God is creator, we create. But what level of God is creator? A limited, limited level of God that deals with world. Shabbos, God stopped creating. When the Jew stops creating, they become associated with the level of godliness, which is supernatural. The level of God above is limited association with world, the way God is on a higher level. So a Jew, by not working on Shabbos, by keeping Shabbos, is connected to the supernatural level of God. That a guy has no connection to. That's why when Moshe Rabbeinu, we learned before in Chumash, in Shmos, when Moshe Rabbeinu came to Pari and said, God told me to take the Jews out of Egypt, what did Pari said? Lo yadaiti es Hashem, I don't know God, v'gam es Yisrael lo yashaleach, and I'm not sending out the Jews. So the question is, what do you mean, Pari said, I don't know God? Pari himself said, Etzba Elokimhi. It's the finger of God. So the answer Chassidus gives, Pari had a connection only to the name of Elokim. To the level of Yudke Vavke, Pari didn't say, Lo Yadaiti Es Elokim. Pari said, Lo Yadaiti Es Hashem, Yudke Vavke. Because a guy has no association with that level of Elokus. So therefore, for a guy, the Torah says, to keep Shabbos, that concept is completely negative, detrimental to the guy, and therefore a guy who does it has supposed to get killed. But for a guy to eat chazer, or to wear shatnez, or to do whatever, There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. But that's coming from Torah. Torah says, for a Jew, Chazir is wrong, Shabbos, not to keep Shabbos, is wrong, and it's absolute. You can't come along and say, well, in 1200 BC, whatever, so you know, you have to keep Shabbos. But today, flicking a switch, you're doing, oh, what's the big deal? You know, it's an entertainment. There's nothing to do with that. The Torah says that the creation of Shabbos is wrong. It's absolute wrong. But
so for a Jew, technically, in a legal matter, there should be no lawyers involved.
There's no concept of lawyers in Torah law.
Correct.
There is no Torah. What?
Why did so many Jews become
lawyers? Let me ask you a question. First of all, that's where the money is. Secondly, you need a Yiddish cup to be a lawyer. Thirdly, I'm not saying that you're not allowed to be a lawyer. If Yeska Shaila, a Jew today is allowed to be a lawyer. But you can't ask the question because are there more Jews in the world that are religious or non-religious?
No.
Meanwhile, non-religious. That doesn't justify it.
You could be a lawyer in halacha and in a secular.
You could do whatever you want, you know.
Freedom of choice.
Because you live in the small state.
Okay.
Maybe Hevel, but you can make money from Hevel.
So it says, Moshe Rabbeinu said to the Jewish people, listen, you want to accept the Torah? You want to accept the Torah? You got to do it either with, you know, simcha, and be excited about accepting it. I don't want you to be forced or coerced into this. So the Jew said, "Kol asher dibur Hashem nase, whatever Hashem said, we're going to do." This is not the concept so much of nase v'nish, but basically the Jews said right away. They didn't even wait to go through the elders. They answered everybody together. They said, "Kol ha'am." They all answered that whatever Hashem said, yachtov, and they answered with unity. They said, "Whatever Hashem wants, we're going to do." Moshe Rabbeinu went back up to God the next morning and returned what the Jews said to God. And there's an interesting lesson over here, Rashi quotes. L'cha'era, didn't God know what the Jewish people say? Why does Moshe Rabbeinu have to go back to God and repeat the return? You know, if I tell you to go tell somebody, say, I need a reply because I don't know the reply. But Hashem knows. So Rashi says, the Torah teaches us derech eretz. The Torah teaches us decency, menschlichkeit. Somebody sends you on a mission, go back to the person and say you did the mission. Even if the person knows you did it. Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching us also human decency. The guy sends you a job, don't say, he knows the answer already, I don't have to tell him. You go back and tell him that you did the job. Okay, so Vayim Hashem Omeisha, Hashem said to Moshe, Hinei Anechi Boi Elecha Ba'ava Anon, I am coming with you in a thick cloud. Ba'avor Yishma Ha'am B'dabri Imach, that everybody should hear when I'm speaking with you. V'gam B'cho Yaminu Le'olam, and also in you they should believe forever. V'yagid Moshe Divrei Ha'am El Hashem, and Moshe Rabbeinu told the words of the nation to Hashem. Meaning, he told them that, when Moshe Rabbeinu said to the Jews, Rashi explained, what did Moshe Rabbeinu say back to God? What happened over here? When Moshe Rabbeinu said that the Jews are willing to hear the Torah, the Jews said to God, we don't want to hear through Moshe. We want to hear through you. One straight. And that's why it says, Hashem said, Hinei anechi bo elecha bava, and I'm coming in the cloud, that yishma ha'am bedabri imach, that the people should listen to me when I speak to you. That means the people, like Rashi says, Ritzeinenu lirei sismalkenu, we don't want to hear it from Moshe Rabbeinu, we want to hear it directly from God himself. Which Hashem was very happy with, that he said, you know, that the Jews said they want to hear it directly from Hashem. And when not, later on in history, we'll learn in Chumash, there are a few cases that the Hashem was upset, that he said, you could have heard it straight from me, and you want to hear it from Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem was upset with the Jewish people. We'll see that later, why they got scared. But there's another thing over here. It says, why is Hashem doing this? V'gam b'cho yaminu le'olam, that they should trust in you forever. If you noted by Kriyas Yamsuf, we learned, v'yaminu b'Hashem u'v'meisha abdo. They believed in God and a meisha servant. So what is Hashem saying, v'gam b'cho yaminu? They'll trust in you. The answer is in the word le'olam, forever. Matan Teira, the Rebbe once spoke a sikh about this concept, that Matan Teira accomplished that the Jews believed in Meisha Rabbeinu. One of the 13 animamins, we don't say because we believe in him, we just don't say him, is that Hashem gives prophecy to prophets. One of the 13 attributes of belief that the Rambam writes is that there is a concept of Amunah in Amunah of Nevi'im and Amunah Sadiqim. Matan Teira, the Teira says, what's going to happen by Matan Teira? It's a remarkable thing. V'gam b'cho yaminu le'elam. The Teira says two things. Number one, everybody's going to see who I'm speaking to them. I'm giving you the Teira. And, equally important, v'gam b'cho yaminu le'elam forever, they will believe in Meisha Rabbeinu. Because belief in the Tzaddik is the vehicle to come to believe in God. The Medrash says, on the positive v'yaminu b'Hashem u'b'meisha avdei, said they believed in God and Amesha in the same breath. It doesn't say, like we learned then, it doesn't say they believed in God and they believed in Amesha. The Pasuk says, Ve'yaminu b'Hashem u'b'meisha avdei. So the Mechilta says, because the Amunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to believe in God, you need to believe in the prophets. And if you believe in the prophets, you believe in God. If you don't believe in the prophets, you don't believe in God. I wouldn't call it a revolution, but in my times there was a thing you wanted the Bachum to learn in a different building, and the Bachum were very upset, and you know, and some Bachum were thinking maybe we shouldn't listen to the Anhala, to the administration. And an older Chassid, was a great Chassid, verbrengt with the Bachrim. And he said a very interesting, when you think about it, when you get old, you have Bochum, we didn't think about it, but when you get older, you think about it more. He said a statement to the Bochum, if you don't listen to your administration, to the Anhola, then you're not listening to the Rebbe. If you don't listen to your superiors, then you can't be listening to the Rebbe. If you don't believe in Meisha Rabbeinu, you can't believe in God. What we're saying over here is similar to the concept. You don't believe in Meisha Rabbeinu, you can't believe in God. And that's what the Pasuk is saying. By Matan Teira, the Pasuk accomplished V'gam b'cho yaminu le'elam. The Rebbe explained once, that's one of the accomplishments of Matan Teira, that the Jews believed in the Nevi'im and to Meisha Rabbeinu. Because the vehicle and the clay, the vessel, to be able to reach Amun and God is only through Meisha Rabbeinu. And that's what Matan Teira accomplished. So even though Hashem spoke directly to the Jews, but Meisha Rabbeinu was a very important person over here in the involvement of the receiving of the Torah. And that's why he says two things. I'm going to come in this thick cloud, okay, that v'gam b'cho, and Rashi says, what does it mean v'gam b'cho? What does it mean, gam? So it says, not only the Nevi'im, not only Meisha Rabbeinu, but the Nevi'im of all generations. Shouldn't fall out. There was Choshech Anan V'Arafel. It says, Chassidus explains there's what's called it's late already, it's not for now, maybe next week. Aspaklaya Me'ira and Aspaklaya She'ena Me'ira. There's a magnifying glass that magnifies something, and then there's a glass that you can just see through, but it doesn't magnify it. Meisha Rabbeinu was on the level of Aspaklaya Me'ira. Meisha Rabbeinu was on a level, a much greater level than all the prophets. Meisha Rabbeinu was much greater than the level of all the other Jews. All the other Jews, their revelation of godliness was a very limited one through a thick cloud. Thick cloud blacks the revelation of the sun. So in a spiritual sense, it blacks the revelation of Elokus. So therefore, when it speaks about Hashem's revelation to the other people, there was Cheshach, An, and Varofel. These are various different levels of Tzimtzum that allowed God to come into the lower people. Moshe Rabbeinu, though, was not on that level. So he didn't need that. He didn't need that in any way whatsoever. Okay.